in Vinaya, they are called medicine, oil, ghee, oil, honey, and molasses. Sakti Nawanita, Tila, Madhu Panita, butter, ghee, molasses, oil, honey. And these five are termed medicine in Vinaya. So they can be taken as medicine. So we can, monks can take honey in the afternoon, ghee in the afternoon, but not as food, only as medicine. On the next page, the word molasses appear. About the end of first five paragraph. Any requisite for life consisting of oil, honey, molasses, ghee, etc. That is allowed by a medical man as suitable for the sick is what is meant. Now, in paragraph 97, the second part, the explanation of the word paccaya in Pali. The word meaning here is this: because breathing things go, move, proceed, using what they use in dependence on these ropes, etc., these ropes, etc., are therefore called requisites. In fact, instead of saying move, proceed, we should say live. Breathing things means beings, living beings. So living beings go, or living beings live, or are alive. In dependence on these ropes and other things, using them. That is why they are called paccaya in Pali. But it is not important whether you don't understand them. The meaning of what paccaya. If you know that it means requisites, then it's enough. Now, in the next paragraph, the fourfold virtue has to be undertaken by means of faith and so on. So, in this paragraph, for that is accomplished by faith, since the announcing of training precepts is outside the disciple's province. It is very important. That's why we cannot change the rules. We cannot add anything to the rules, or we cannot take anything out of the rules. Because the announcing or laying down the rules is not in the province of disciples. Disciples cannot do that. Only the Buddha can do that. So, if a monk has no faith or no devotion to the Buddha and his teachings, then he will not want to follow or to keep all these rules. That is why the Patimokkha restraint, or the first virtue, is to be undertaken by means of faith, by means of devotion to the Buddha. And the evidence here is the refusal of the request to allow disciples to announce training precepts. And that is not, those in the brackets are to be stricken out.
Seeing Vinaya.
Refusal of the request to announce training precepts.
Oh, I see. Allow.
Not to allow disciples to know. It refers to Vinaya. Now, Sariputta asked Buddha how the the dispensation of different Buddhas fare. Say some dispensation of some Buddhas last long, and some did not last long. And so Buddha answered that there were precepts and so on. So Sariputta requested the Buddha to lay down rules. So please lay down rules so that the dispensation of Buddha can endure long. Then Buddha said, no, it is not yet time. And that means you do not know when to lay down rules, but I know, the Buddha meant. So laying down of rule is not in the province of disciples. So the words in the brackets are not in the original, but put by the translator, but wrongly. So here is the evidence here is the refusal of the request to announce training precepts or to lay down rules. Having therefore undertaken through faith the training precepts without exception as announced, one should completely perfect them without regard even for life. So let's put the word even here. Even for life, for this is said, as a hen guards her eggs, or as a yak her tail, or like a darling child, or like an only eye. So you who are engaged, your virtue to perfect, be prudent. Be prudent really means be fond of your virtue at all times, and ever scrupulous. Scrupulous really means in the Pali, but the Pali word really means have respect for the rules, have respect for the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and so on. And then we have the story. So the story is not difficult to understand. Now, he augmented his insight. I know, I hope you understand that. He augmented his insight. What's that?
He saw into the future?
Actually, he practiced Vipassana meditation. And the second story. Also, they bound another elder in Tambapani Island with string creepers and made him lie down. When a forest fire came and the creepers were not cut. No. Here it should be, when the creepers came, without cutting the creepers, he established insight. Because he was bound with creepers. And when the forest fire came, he could easily cut the creepers and escape. But to cut the creepers means to break the rule of the Buddha. So he would sooner give up his life than break the rules of the Buddha. So without cutting the creepers, he practiced meditation. And he became an arahant. So when a forest fire came, without cutting the creepers, he established insight and attained nibbana simultaneously with his death. So simultaneously really means almost simultaneously. Not at the same moment. But mind works very fast, and so it is almost instantaneous, almost simultaneous. So he became an arahant. So the advice given with regard to this story is maintain the rules of conduct pure, renouncing life if there be need, rather than break virtues restrained by the world savior decrees. So you should give up your life rather than breaking the rules laid down by the Buddha. Okay. You have any questions?
I'm a little curious in reading all of this about essentially about asceticism and how an ascetic lives his life, and monk, the traditional story of the Buddha renouncing asceticism. How are those two related?
Yeah. Now, when they decide that Buddha renounced asceticism, it means he renounced the unnecessarily inflicting pain on oneself or self-mortification. For example, when he was in the forest practicing to become the Buddha, he reduced his food little by little. First he went out for alms and ate food, and then he took fruit from trees and ate them, and later he took only the fruits that had fallen, and later on he took the fruit only from the tree where under which he was living. And so little by little he reduced eating so that his body became very thin and emaciated. Well, that is an unnecessarily inflicting suffering on himself. So that kind of asceticism Buddha refused, or Buddha denied. But the ascetic practices given here are not that severe, not that rigorous, like eating in one bowl only, or going out for alms, and then when going for alms, you do not skip any house and so on. So these are called asceticism, ascetic practices, but not like those practiced by the other hermits or sages during his time. We will come to the ascetic practices in the second chapter. One thing I want to say is, when I went to a Zen center in Japan, after eating in their bowls, they rinse the bowl and then they drink the water from the bowls. So it reminded me of the one of the ascetic practices Theravada monks practice, and that is eating in one bowl only. So if you have only to use one bowl, then you eat in that bowl and you drink in that bowl. So I think there is some practices carried to countries far away from India, and then may have changed a little, and so it seemed to become a very different practice. But I think there is something common in both practices.
Yeah, when we eat in the Zendo, we eat that way with bowls and we wash our bowls.
Yes.
And also, you're always served, and it's like alms. It's like the food comes
and
it's served to you. So it's we don't do begging, but yes, in the way we eat in the Zendo, it's very similar.
That's right. And when monks are invited to houses of lay people, during the time of the Buddha, or even at the present time in Sri Lanka, the monks sit on the floor, say in a row, and then lay people take food and then put in their bowls one by one, like you're eating in 10 Zen centers. So that is the practice done in India and also in Sri Lanka. But in Burma it's different. So we can see many similarities or many common practices that have become a little changed depending on the country and on the people, on the races.
But the original intention seems to be there in every...
That's right, yeah. These are all meant to Now, dutanga means, what do you call this? To shake off. So it is to shake off defilement that these practices have to be taken. Fewness of wants and no attachment to food and all these things.
So probably by practicing that, you know, particular act, I guess, keep reminding yourself of that, you know, for why you're eating and so on.
And that's right, yeah. You know,
for the taste or that beautify.
You always have to be on your guard to avoid the mental defilements from coming to your mind.
Many people talk about they don't like their job or they don't feel good about their livelihood, but we can see here how monks are warned or have to be careful exactly how.
Oh yes.
So in a lot of ways, that's another reflection about how in our more complex society, how we act. How we can be careful about our behavior, though not maybe in the exact same way, but
that's right. Yes.
How in each act, how easy it is to be selfish, and
mm-hmm.
even if it's not in a very little thing. You know.
So try to put Buddhism in some way in everyday life. Be mindful.
That's right. And in one of the suttas in Anguttara Nikaya, the daily reflections are given there. A monk or a lay person must make these reflections. That means I'm getting old and I cannot avoid getting old. And I'll get disease, and I cannot avoid that. I'll one day die, and I cannot get away from it, and so on. So these reflections have to be made every day, both by monks and lay people, so that they can get rid of pride in their youth, pride in their health, and pride in their belongings, and so on. That's a very good sutta. Both for monks and laymen.
Which sutra is this?
This is in the Anguttara, the gradual sayings. I don't remember the name of the sutra.
But do you think that might be, there might be some problem with, you know, some, it might not be for everyone, because some person with a depressive tendency, you know, if you do that too much, you know, you might just go over the Golden Gate.
That's right, yeah. No.
How do you...
You have to follow the, what do you call that, middle way. Golden Gate. No. These reflections are to be made not to get depressed in, you know. It is to get rid of pride in yourself or in your appearance or in your body or whatever. So it is for the purpose of getting rid of undesirable mental traits that these have to be practiced. And not to be carried too far. You know, once when Buddha taught about the foulness of the body, monks got so disgusted with their bodies that they kill themselves and they ask other people to kill them. That really happened during the time of the Buddha. And Buddha knew that it would happen, but he couldn't avoid it, because in the commentaries it is explained that the karma they did in the past, they did together in the past, got opportunity to give result at that time. And so Buddha thought, if they had to die, let them die with this kind of meditation. It will help them to get a good rebirth. So Buddha taught the foulness of the body meditation, and then he said, I must not be approached by any monk for 15 days, 2 weeks. I want to be alone. Only the monk who brings food must approach me. So after 15 days, he came out of his seclusion and then asked Ananda, why Ananda, there are fewer monks now? Ananda said, because you taught that Dhamma, you taught that meditation. And so Ananda asked Buddha to teach some other kind of meditation. So he taught the breathing meditation at that time.
That's a true story.
That's in the book of discipline. If you want to read the book of discipline, I cannot tell the page, but it's the third of the first four defeat rules which entail defeat. So the third one is not to kill human beings. So killing human beings is a grave offense for the monks. So that story is given there. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So please read to the end of first chapter for next week.